This is continuing where we were talking about regarding the animals that are mentioned in Parshas Re'eh and Perek Yudal, Pasuk Dal, and Pasuk Hei. So the first thing is that the Ibn Ezra points out that we're missing a vav between the words shor and seksavim, while every other animal has a vav in front of its name. You have viseizim. In the next Pasuk, obviously, it starts off with ayol, so there is no vav, but utzvi v'yachmor v'akov v'disham v'tov zomer. But by the seksavim, it's with a shor, it's not there. There are examples of this throughout Chumash. The Ibn Ezra points out, like in Bereishis, by the words shemesh and yoreach, there's no vav in between shemesh and yoreach, and it usually connotes a second item, which is just as chashuv as the first. The problem here is that one would certainly think a sheep would be inferior to a bull. He wouldn't think that a sheep is chashuv as a bull. And if not, maybe it would be equal to a goat. He doesn't explain it all, he just points it out. I think the answer that might be here, for the answer for the Ibn Ezra's question, is that both bulls and sheep are used extensively as korbanos of every type, while goats are relegated for korban chatas and the chagim, right, and certain other times, and that's that. Of course, you bring goats for other things as well, like the korban pesach, but it was likely used more than not as a korban tzibor, as the korban that one didn't want to bring, the chatas, especially considering the infamy of the seer la'zazel. Maybe for that reason, sheep are written without a vav to say it's important, like a shor, when it comes to korbanos, and what people thought of it, as opposed to a goat, which was considered inferior by them. Maybe that's the idea behind it. The word se appears by both sheep and goats. Seksavim useizim. Now, se does not really mean sheep, even though that's how we translate it. It really means flocks. But really, over here, it's coming to exclude from something else. Targum Yonasan says it's to exclude a form of kilayim between the two. If you had a goat and a sheep that mated, and you had a child from that, it wouldn't automatically be kosher, even though it comes from two Torah creatures. That's how Targum Yonasan puts it. Now, that is how Rashi understands it in Chulin Ayin Chasim Aveis, but it's against the real opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, the prevailing opinion, who holds that such an animal, since it comes from two Torah animals, would definitely be kosher. The mother is kosher. According to him, this pasuk is excluding a form of kilayim that comes from a kosher and non-kosher animal, where the seh ksavim or the seh izim is the father, and there's another animal that's the mother. Targum Yonasan has to be read a little bit differently, if that's the way it goes. But either way, it could be that Targum Yonasan is going with the other Shita, or that Targum Yonasan has to be read a little bit differently in order to fit in with Rebbe Eliezer. The Baal HaTurim says goats are last in the Pasuk, and right next to Ayol and the Chayos of the next Pasuk, because they're the most wild of the three. Of the three of Shor and Seksavim and Seizim, Seizim is the most like a Chaya. This hints to the Gemara Chulin Nun Tesem Aveis that easy to karkos are a type of chaya, even though they're still called goats, because there are goats that are wild enough to be called that way, like mountain goats. And I think we have goats that exist nowadays that are technically goats, but you wouldn't necessarily think of it as a domestic animal. You would think of it as more of a wild animal. The Miamloes says the reason that these animals are mentioned is so that you could eat the flesh of these animals if you recognize them, even if you don't see them chewing their cud or have split hooves. In the Minchas Chinuch, and it happens to be the Sefer HaChinuch as well as the Rambam, seems to say that no, you have to know that they chew their cud and split hooves, and it's the mitzvah semidio reisa to see that it has split hooves and chews their cuds. But according to the Miyamloi, chews their cud. But the Miyamloi says that no, as long as you know that's that, and that's similar to what we set up above with the Chavetzelos HaSharon. If you know, for example, that the Zemer is a giraffe, you'd be allowed to eat its flesh, even if you're not sure if it actually chews its cud and did no investigation into it whatsoever. Since we don't know how to translate these animals properly, that would be an issue, but that's why they're written down in these psukim. And again, that was the answer that we set up above. The Ibn Ezra says the ayol and the tzvi are yiduin. They're well known. They don't need to be translated. Well, the others require a Kabbalah to know exactly what they are. As you said before, from the Emloes in the last year, assumptions cannot be made because you might be eating the wrong animal. For this reason, Art Scroll Chumash didn't bother to translate these words. They just put a transliterated version in English. It did nothing more than that. Rav Shamshul Fal Hirsch, who normally translates everything, he leaves these animals that they are. He gives no translation. The editor adds on names, but Rav Hirsch himself says nothing at all. Now, those who say you don't need a Misor in order to eat animals or birds that are kosher, according to the Simanim that we have today. We have Simanim. The birds have four that are mentioned in Chulin. The animals, obviously, these mammals have two. And the Chacham HaZadim, however, in Klal Lamed Vav Din Aleph, is of the opinion based on the Shach that one needs a Mesorah for animals as well. Itzel Apanovich held that there may be an issue with birds. Rambam says in the beginning of Hilchos Machlos Asuras that there is a mitzvah saseh to know the Simanim, like we just said, that differentiate behemoths from Chayos based on Vayikra Chaf Hei, and Yud Aleph Mem Zayin. Eating without checking the Simanim would be over on a mitzvah saseh if there is any chash that this animal might be tameh, even with a rove. Since the Torah lists the birds that are not able to be eaten, if we're not positive which ones are which, we're not doing what we need to do to ensure we're eating the proper animals. Maybe by mammals it's different, since we're not listing the tummy ones, but certainly by birds it would be an issue, according to the Rambam, if we're not positive what birds are listed in the Torah, and that's why the Mesorah is so important. So for sure by the birds, Rav Itzel Apanovich would say, according to the Rambam, you would need to have a Mesorah. It's possible, the Chachmas Adam would say that applies by animals as well. But that comes into issues when you deal with pheasants, for example, or different types of, you know, different types of birds that we're not sure whether you can eat or not. I mean, even turkeys are a little bit problematic. But either way, you know, each one is, you have your local Rex Rav to be able to ask them whether or not you can eat these certain animals. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says the names of each of these animals show that they're kosher. Hashem swears by the Tzva'os and the Ayalos HaSada and Shir HaShirim, the Ayol and the Tzvi. It's unlikely Hashem would swear by an animal that's not Tahor. The Yachmur is an animal that lives by Mayim Rabim. Mayim is always a sign of Tahara, says the Rabbeinu Bechaya. Akko comes from the word Kivisi, Tefillah. Dishon from the word Dayish, threshed grain. And To'o from the word Visavisam, a good desire. Zemer, as in singing to Hashem. Since all these animals have positive connotations that come through their name, it shows that they're animals that we're allowed to eat. Now, even though it seems that everyone knows that the Tzvi is a deer, and the Ebenezer says, Avod, the Tzvi and the Ayol is Yiduim, the Tzvi is a deer, the word Chizkuni uses for it does mean the red deer. It's a type of deer that lives in Europe and in that part of Asia, possibly at that time. The characteristics attributed to the Tzvi and Chulin indicate that it's not really a deer, it's a gazelle instead. The Ayol, Ayol as opposed to Ayil, Ayil is a name for a male ram. The Ayol refers to a deer whose antlers grow constantly thin and branchy, growing them back every year after they fall out at some point. So it seems like the Ayol is really the deer, while Tzvi refers to a gazelle. The Septuagint likely mixed up these two words, which means that this Tzvi refers to the Dordica. So actually, if you look at the Septuagint, meaning King James Bible, you're going to see that Tzvi is a deer, and Ayol is a gazelle. But it's likely that it was just mixed up. Tzvi refers to the Dorkida in Greek, or the bright-eyed one. That certainly refers to the gazelle that has these bright, lustrous eyes. The Ayol would be the Alaphon. And the alaphon is a deer. That's the Greek word for deer over there. That's how Septuagint puts it. So they probably messed up, but it happens to be that they do translate Tzvi as deer. Targum Onkelos calls the Yachmur a Yachmura. Well, that doesn't help very much, right? In Bechoro Zayinu Mabez, the animal is mentioned as having eggs that come from its body. The Chizkuni says that's referring to a bibra. This doesn't refer to actual eggs that you would have by like a bird or, you know, fish or whatever it is, right? It refers to something that comes out of its stomach that's a little bit strange, some type of, I don't know, maybe a mass of calcium or something like that. But the Chizkuni calls it a bibra. Rav Sadia Gaon says it's referring to an animal that has a short tail and three twists to its horns. The Rav Hoffman, in Vayikra, in his second volume on page 225, says that this may be the fallow deer. The fallow deer is a deer that looks like a regular deer. It's got huge antlers, obviously, and it's got white spots all over its back. Rav Arya Kaplan calls this an antelope with a white backside, based on Malachim Aleph Parakei Pasuk Gimel. He talks about the animals that Shlomo Melech used to serve at his public seudos, and he says that over there. The Radak calls it a large white goat, while the Abarbanel and Malachim Aleph calls it a buffalo. According to Rav Arya Kaplan, it's likely that it's referring to the sable antelope. The sable antelope does have a white rump as well as white on its forehead itself. It does have two horns that are a little bit hard. It doesn't have the three twists, as Rav Sadia Gaon says, three twists to its horn, but it does have a shortish tail. It's possibly that's what it refers to. So Yachmur would be either, the way we have it right now, either is referring to a fallow deer, or we call it like a sable antelope, possibly a buffalo, according to the Abarbanel. Now Rashi says the Akko, the Akko, the fourth animal that's mentioned in the pasuk, is a Yala. Targum Onkelos says, the Ya'al of the rocks. In Old French, that translates to Astanbuk, which is likely referring to what we call an ibex, which still lives in the hills near Ein Gedi and Eretz Yisrael. If you go to Ein Gedi, you can still see them around there today. In Chulat Hayyamot Aleph, they call it a wild goat. The ibex certainly seems to be that way. Ibex are regular. They look like large goats, look like a little bit large goats. They have these huge horns that come up in their head and a curvature that goes backward. They're not really good for chauffeurs, but they can be used for chauffeurs. Rav Sadia Gaon says there are two bones that jut out from its back, and its horns are wide. Now, if Rav Sadia Gaon is saying that, and that's what it means, it cannot be the ibex. The ibex does not have that referring to that. That refers to a type of antelope. But that's what Rav Sadia Gaon, it could be that he's arguing and everybody else that says clearly that this is an ibex. Targum Onkelos, Targum Yonason, and the Radak called the Dishon a Rema, which seems to be an animal called the Re'em. Now, this is an animal mentioned by the Medrash to have one horn and possibly very huge. Check out Zvachim Kuvyat Gimel and Mabez for what it says over there. And the Medrash Rabbah seems to call that it has one horn in the middle of its forehead. Now, there are animals that don't have horns in the middle of its forehead, but the rhinoceros does make sense. It's a huge animal that is very powerful. And although African rhinos all have two horns, there's two type, the white and the black. Of course, all of them are gray, but some of them are a little bit darker. The reason why they're called white and black is really based on a mistake when they were discovered, the white rhino. The real difference between the two is the snout. The white rhino has a wide snout. The black rhino has a narrow snout. When they called it wide, someone mistook it for white and called the other rhino black because it's a darker rhino. The name stuck, so that's why it's called white and black. But happens to be they're different. Nowadays, there's subspecies of the white rhino and the black rhino, but regardless, those are all the rhinos themselves. But there are other rhinos that live in the Far East, such as the Indian, the Javan, and the Sumatran rhinos. Each one of them has one horn on its snout. Each are very endangered. In fact, I think there's only like 15 Javan rhinoceri that still exist today. However, none of these are kosher, since they don't have split hooves, they don't chew their cud, according to the requirements laid down by Chazal. But it is possible there was a rhino that roamed the earth that did fit the Torah's requirements, that did have split hooves, and had, you know, split hooves and chew their cud. The example that we'd be able to give this is the Elasmotherium. There's no way to figure that out because obviously we don't have the stomach of the Elasmotherium. But the Elasmotherium was a one-horned, huge horn rhinoceros that was hairy, though it had some hair on it, back in the day. Perhaps that's what the rain refers to. The Chizkuni, however, calls it a shigla. Rav Kaplan says this translates into a chamoy, or a kamoy, I'm not so sure, to be honest, how to pronounce it, but it's C-H-A-M-O-I-S. It's a small goat-like antelope that has very short horns. It could also be the Attucks. The Attucks is a light-colored antelope with twisted horns, right? One of them is white. The Attucks is usually white with like a brownish face with white stripe across its eyes. But that it could be. It could also be this, the chamois or the Attucks. Rav Sadigon says it lives in desert areas, has small horns and a very short tail. It still exists today near Yemen. It was known to them that very well works out well to be an Attucks. That does make a lot of sense. Rabbi Hoffman says it refers to a type of antelope, right? And again, it could be that it's possible that it's referring to an antelope. It makes more sense also that Rabbi Hoffman says it's referring to an Attucks if it goes that way. But there are so many other things that are out there. There's an animal called the bongo, which is a really pretty looking creature, which is a red brownish type creature with white stripes that go all along its back and big horns that go off its head. Could be referring to something like that, or an eland, E-L-A-N-D. It's very similar. It has those white stripes on its back. But again, we have absolutely no idea if this is really referring to this. All this is referring, again, to the Dishon. Was it a rhino with one horn in the middle? Was it an Attucks? Is it a chamoy? Is it referring to a bongo or another type of antelope, or possibly the eland? We have no idea. Now, Rashi says the to'o is a turbala, according to Targum Onkelos, and turbar, according to Targum Yonason. That's a turbar. Turbala really refers to the axe of the forest. The axe of the forest, the wild bull. That's Tori Bar according to Targum as well. In Aramaic, the shin and tuf are interchangeable, so that's why tur becomes shore. That refers to a shore. The word bala means ya'ar forest. It makes sense. That's what Targum means over here. Radak says this as well in Shorashim. And the likelihood is that we're referring to something like the buffalo. Like a water buffalo, cape buffalo, any type of creature like that. A wild bull. Which makes a lot of sense. But the Septuagint translates it as an oryx or the aurox. The oryx is another huge type of antelope that also has white and black on its forehead. Very striking legs as well that are white and black with a very gray body. But it also could be referring to the aurox, A-U-R-O-C-H-S. The oryx is R-Y-X, but the aurox is A-U-R-O-C-H-S, which is an extinct member of the cow family, which is especially large and is where all the domestic cows come from. So it could be this was the tur habar. That was the actual cow. The Chizkuni, however, calls it a shulya, which we can't really translate. Rav Sadigon calls it tital. It's bigger than the deer mentioned earlier. It has long, straight, thin horns with rings around them. Now, again, if that's it, it's not a buffalo, and it's not any cow that we know of. Perhaps it's referring to a type of antelope again, right? It could be something else entirely. So what do we have over here? The turbala is referring to the wild bull. It could refer to the buffalo, the oryx, the aurox, and possibly a huge antelope as well. The final animal on this list is the zamer. The zamer, Targum Onkelos, Targum Yonason, translates it as a ditza. Once again, Rashi is silent. We have no idea what the ditza is. We know what Rashi held over here. Chizkuni explains every single animal on this list. He goes through every single one and tells us what it is, except for this one. He just says, lo isparish. It was never explained. There were Sadigon, Rabbeinu Yonah, Radak, and in other places, they translate the zamer as a giraffe, of which there are 7 subspecies, right? But they're all basically the same creature. The problem with that is you would think that if this was a giraffe and the Torah is coming to describe it for you, the Gemara is going into what the zamer looks like, the easiest way to describe it would be this huge neck and the long legs. Just say, huge animal with a long neck that has very striking features because of everything else like that. Since the Gemara doesn't describe it that way, It's likely it's not a giraffe. How would you not describe a giraffe that way? If it is a giraffe, Tzora Lateva explains why it would be called a zamer. Maybe it's a euphemism, because it's well known that giraffes are almost completely silent. They don't have a song of their own, unlike almost all other animals of the Serengeti. Hence my favorite book, Giraffes Can't Dance. If you don't own that book, you should own that book. However, it could also mean that the word zimur, as in prudent, because it has the ability to grab leaves and branches off of trees that no other animal can get to. No other animal can get to it, but it can go there. So it's zimur. So either it's zamer as a euphemism, or zimur, it prunes, takes off the branches of trees that nobody else can get to. The rokeach, however, has a third answer. It says, it was such a well-known, powerful creature, which is true. Giraffes are unbelievably powerful. That when it was captured, the people that captured it used to sing zmiros to one another that they were able to do this. It was like the song of the capturing. And that's why it's called the zamer, because of the idea of what they did when they captured it. Okay, we'll stop with that. Have a great Shabbos, everyone.